Good evening, everyone. I'll declare the meeting open and begin by acknowledging that we're on the traditional lands of the Kaurna people. We respect their elders past and present. I'll let everyone know that the meeting will be recorded and after minutes confirmed, the audio will be available. Obviously, apart from any confidential items, does any elected member wish to foreshadow a potential conflict of interest with any item on the agenda? No, then we'll keep going. Would someone like to move, actually moving on block, confirmation of the minutes of the General Council meeting and noting the communications reports? Moved Councillor Telfer, seconded Councillor Masika. All those in favour? Carried unanimously, thank you. So we go straight down to committee recommendations. I do want to highlight a couple of points, but there's no reason we couldn't take those two sets of minutes on block, planning, development and review and selection. Someone want to move? Councillor Pryor, you have a query?
I have a question about the conflict of interest provisions for those items because
yes,
they are still relating to items where people have large conflicts of interest in that area. So is this one of those times where because we're just confirming minutes of the planning committee that's okay to stay in?
That would be my suggestion because we're not actually deciding anything that has any effect on people's property. Confirming, I'm just looking what it says about the southern suburbs residential policy. The committee recommended that we deal with that policy before two other policies in question. But I don't think that affects an interest. If anyone living in the area affected by the amendment, that is it's pretty well south of Seacombe Road, they could declare a perceived conflict, but I would leave that up to individual members because I'm not sure that there's an interest affected by noting the minutes.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably more about what the minutes say than that. So I'll be declaring a perceived conflict of interest in that item.
As holding property in...
Yeah, I'll be declaring a conflict of interest or a perceived conflict of interest for the item.
So I will... remind all members, let's try and use the microphones appropriately, but I'll also remind members of the public, if you do want to convey a message to the chair of the meeting, feel free to contact one of our friendly staff there and they can run up a message and that way it's a bit less disruptive, but I do appreciate that. Now, we've had that conflict of interest noted due to owning property in the area covered by the Southern Suburbs, the potential Southern Suburbs Code Amendment. Otherwise, I was after someone to move those two sets of minutes confirmed on block. Councillor Pryor, so moved.
Yeah, I'm happy to move as well.
And seconded Councillor Hoffman. Now, just before we go any further, I just wanted to highlight that with the change of plans of the SAJC and the vanishing of the possibility of stables on site on the racecourse precinct proper, because that was originally one of the motivations for us pursuing a code amendment for the stables area at the northern end of Morfettville, it's a bit of a question mark about whether it's still worth pursuing. So staff were going to informally send a letter by way of consultation to residents to see what they thought about pursuing it or not. So I just asked, I mean, it's not a matter of resolution, so I'm just asking whether that letter has in fact been sent or been formulated. Mr. Lyons, thank you. Right, I'm advised that the letter has been drafted. I'm just consulting a moment further. We're just seeing if we can increase the volume of the sound equipment. I can only do so much myself, or indeed others, in terms of speaking into the microphone, but we're doing the best we can. If the volume can be put up, it'll be put up. Otherwise, we'll just have to carry on. So I did want to point that out. And for those interested, I just thought the highlight in terms of the planning minutes was the priority discussed by the committee, the Southern Suburbs residential policy, that by far and away affects many more people than the other two. The centre zones is a series of quite technical and small amendments in relation to local shopping centres, the very small ones dotted around the suburbs. And the urban corridor, Marion Road, again, needs a bit more work. Things keep changing along Marion Road. So that's a little bit further down the track. Apart from that, in the review and selection committee minutes, councillors will note that there were some recommendations to council. It's on page 30 of the agenda about the various corporate KPIs. And I just wanted to note, not that it doesn't affect the motion that we're currently thinking about, but I just wanted to note that there has been further discussion about removing the exemption or separating out of council initiated increases in personnel necessitated by increased standards or varying of projects. So that's something that we'll have to address when the annual review of those corporate KPIs comes up. But with those comments, does anyone have anything further? Otherwise, we can proceed to a vote. Then we can proceed to a vote. All those in favour of those confirming those minutes, before I accept the vote, Councillor Valescu.
I just wanted to clarify, with a conflict of interest, if I have a property in the Southern Hill Zone, by voting on this, is that a potential conflict? Or I'm not sure how broad the discussion was. So
the relevant question is whether the minutes be accepted.
Okay.
And so, as I said earlier, I can't see how that really does it affect anyone's interest in itself.
Yep.
There is a suggestion about what order we should approach the different code amendments in, but that doesn't change the situation. So I think Councillor Pryor has declared that perceived conflict of interest as a matter of great caution, but it's up to each individual member.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess we're not really deciding on anything. I just thought I'd double check.
Well, that is correct. I'll just ask our governance manager if there's anything to add. No, it was just indicated to me that that might be a matter for when the code amendment comes through for decision. That would be a different matter and a different answer. So I just want to take that vote again to be sure. All those in favour of confirmation, those two committee minutes, that's carried unanimously. Thank you. Now, with your... Perhaps if we just deal with the cover reports of the confidential matters, they could be dealt with en bloc. Four items to go into confidence. There were just very minimal discussion of touching on confidential matters in the planning and the review and selection committee meetings. So it's a bit borderline, but they have confidential notes, but certainly there are two tender situations where clearly it needs to go into confidence for commercial reasons. So would someone like to move those four en bloc? Councillor Telfer and seconded Councillor Taylor. So I think I can just put those if there are no questions. All those in favour, that's carried unanimously. And now what I will do for the convenience of members of the public is seek leave of the meeting to postpone those confidential items to the end of this council meeting, because obviously we will need a little bit of time to discuss them. So if no one objects, that's what we'll do. And that brings us straight through to the fleet transition plan on page 37. Mr. Harrison, do you want to give any intro to this one or any of the managers? The table there with the relevant costs and timing speaks for itself. But
through the chair, if I can just make some introductory comments while the manager for procurement also comes up. And I understand there has been some discussions as recent as today in relation to a possible amendment. So the background obviously is that the previous elected members showed a very keen interest to try and see whether we could accelerate the transition from conventional vehicles, fossil fuel vehicles, through to hybrid slash electric vehicles. And even since this elected member body has come together in November, there's also been a strong suggestion to see whether or not we can explore how we could look to transition in a more aggressive manner towards electric vehicles across the fleet, but in particular in relation to passenger transport vehicles. And the question really was posed by the previous elected members and also current members as to, can you please indicate for elected members to consider as to what the aggregate additional cost may be to actually accelerate moving to electric vehicles? Hence, through the report that you have and the tables that have been provided, we've attempted to look at a more aggressive approach over the next 12 months. Through that process, we've looked at around about 36 vehicles, and they are a configuration of what we refer to as pool vehicles, vehicles used across the City of Marion by staff, and secondly, some salary package vehicles by contract staff that we would look to also accelerate moving those more conventional fueled vehicles to electric vehicles at the same time. So hence we've come up with a first round, more aggressive model of potentially 36 or up to 36 vehicles. The way that we see we could do that is that we could actually look at disposing our conventional pool vehicles ahead of time. So we wouldn't necessarily wait for the 50 or 60,000 kilometres or the 2 to 3 years to come up. We'd actually look at disposing them sooner than we normally would. That depends a little bit on the availability of ordering electric vehicles. And the latest information we have, depending on the manufacturer, is anywhere up to 12 months, but it can be as soon as 6 months. But maybe a 6 to 12 month timeframe is around about what we would be looking at to put in orders. And we have already ordered 2 electric vehicles. So this is about a more aggressive, accelerated transition up to, I guess, 36 vehicles, a period of around about 12 months. And it comes with a significant impost of cost because there is around about an additional cost to quit a current vehicle and move to an electric vehicle of round figures $30,000 to $35,000 per vehicle. If you do your sums and you multiply that by 36, you can soon get a sense it's around about $1 million of extra cost from a current conventional fuel vehicle to an electric vehicle. There is a significant caveat, though, that must be discussed, and I think it will be aired by some councillors tonight, that in this site, City Development is referred to it, and also City Services, the depot on Marion Road, we are at capacity in relation to drawing on electricity to charge vehicles or for other miscellaneous purposes. And I'll come back to the Marion Water business in a moment. In this vehicle, we have actually installed an additional electric vehicle charger. It's downstairs. Sadly, we cannot operate or use it at the moment because it is highly likely that it will trip the electrical system if we were to draw through that electric vehicle charger. So we need an upgrade in relation to this site, City Development. The suggestion, as you've seen in the papers and also the consultant's report, is around about $600,000 for City Development, this site, and $600,000 for City Services, Marion Road, to look at upgrading the electrical infrastructure, nothing to do with vehicle charges, but the electrical infrastructure to increase capacity to allow for, to some extent, trickle charging, which is a long-term charging of vehicles up to 8 or so hours, or even rapid charging, which can be done in around about 1 to 2 hours or 3 hours in some cases. So we do need to address at a point in time, infrastructure upgrades of both this site and City Services. They can be done independently. They don't have to be done at the same time. So it does allow us an option to some extent to look at a transition using one site versus both sites simultaneously. If I can just add the additional piece of information at the moment, please, and some councillors are aware of this. I know Councillor Taylor was at a meeting with myself yesterday, that the approved expansion of the Marion Water business by council, some 12 kilometres of additional purple pipe, does require a infrastructure upgrade at the city services at Marion Road Depot to accommodate additional pumping to afford pressure through the expansion system, which will probably need to be done sometime in the next 12 months as well, because once again, we're at full capacity at our city services Marion Road building. Option two really allows us then to organically change over vehicles over a extended time frame. It does require the infrastructure proposition, so that doesn't change, but it does allow us to quit vehicles when they ordinarily would fall due for that over the next 1 to 3 years. And we can certainly look at doing that sooner in some cases and capitalising on the second vehicle return value that we are experiencing at the moment, which is substantially higher than what the market would ordinarily allow for. And then the third model, which we've put in there for consideration, really just to explore all options, is really to further capitalise on vehicles that are somewhat available at the moment, hybrid vehicles, which allow for a reduction in carbon emissions, but certainly doesn't allow you the full benefit of going to a full EV vehicle at the same time. And EV vehicles, ideally, you want to capitalise through a charging process when you're using renewable energy rather than fossil fuel energy, or otherwise, I guess, you're compromising the process to some extent. But it is a more extended, considered approach over 2 to 3 years. In saying that, hybrid vehicles, a Toyota RAV4 hybrid for them at the moment, is taking somewhere in excess of 12 months, maybe 18 months to get a RAV4 hybrid vehicle delivered at the moment too. So there can be an extended waiting time to get hybrid vehicles delivered and put into the fleet, despite the fact we have a considerable spread of hybrid vehicles already. So I think that's a summary. Three options we've put forward. I say with some degree of caution that vehicles are one thing. You certainly need the charging capacity and you need the infrastructure capacity at the same time. As a CE, despite the fact we do allow some company cars to go home with workers who can justify a potential on-call or recall emergency capacity, I'm not necessarily in favour of allowing for all vehicles to be charged at private premises. There are implications for those sorts of propositions in relation to appropriate and proper use of vehicles in some cases, FBT tax and other considerations. But certainly we would have some ability to do some charging of vehicles in some private addresses, particularly contract arrangements where staff take a contracted vehicle and pay for that vehicle. We could certainly look at some degree of compromise of charging within home addresses to take the pressure immediately off city services and also the city development building as well. Hopefully that's covered, but happy to take questions, obviously.
Any questions from councillors? I'll take Councillor Masika, then Councillor Crossland.
Thanks, Your Worship. Thanks, Mr. Harrison and your team for producing such a wonderful report. My question is, while you are writing this report, did you investigate with the other neighbouring councils, what are they doing, or through the state, what are they doing? Do they have such big appetite of changing up or transitioning from fossil fuel to the electrical vehicle, or what sort of process they have, or they're taking into consideration, and how long is going to take to change from where they are today to the electrical vehicles?
Certainly, thank you for the question through the chair. If I can respond by handing this question over to Mr. Dunnicliffe, who is our senior procurement manager, and some elected members may not be aware that Mr. Dunnicliffe is actually employed by Port Adelaide Enfield Council, Charles Sturt Council, and ourselves in a tripartite arrangement. So we share a very senior resource across procurement. It also enables us to not only have economies of scale, but allows us to make comparisons as to what other councils are doing, which is ideal for us to try and adopt best practice. So I may just pause there for a moment and allow Jamie to provide a response to that question.
Thank you. And through the chair, if we look at our collaborating councils, City of Port Adelaide Enfield have made the move to go to full electric vehicles as the cars are up for renewal. That has commenced 6 months ago and is taking place over the next 1 to 3 years. City of Charles Sturt have gone in a slightly different direction. They approved a policy position 18 months ago to have one round of hybrid vehicles and electric vehicles to be after that. So they're looking at full electric vehicles by 26, 27.
Councillor Crossland.
Thank you. I might have to use my three questions. First question is, how many vehicles could we successfully run without the upgrade of the infrastructure, as in just trickle charge?
If maybe I go first, but I certainly once again put the caveat on board that we are waiting for the updated report on city services in May this year. So we're sort of running 6 or 8 weeks probably ahead of ourselves of having the detailed advice on that quest to be able to answer that question fully. My sense is that we could put additional burden on the system in a trickle charge format, which would allow the longer charge time for vehicles. Any attempt to do rapid charge requires an upgrade, so we can't do rapid charge. So the best we can hope for at the moment, if we make a more aggressive move to electric vehicles, we are going to have to go for a trickle charge model. I think it's appropriate to treat that with a large degree of caution. If we were to start going to 6, 8, 10, 15 vehicles, or let's just say in excess of 25 or 30, I think there is a risk of having all of our eggs in one basket with only a single format of charging, that being trickle charge. My understanding is, and I've spoken to a lot of people in the last 3 months in relation to electric vehicles, councils around Australia that are going down this path, is that electric vehicles are no different to a mobile telephone. That when you come into access of a charger, you put it on charge. So whether you get 5%, 10% or 100% top up, you try and encourage the user of the vehicle to keep topping it up when a charger is available. They're not ideally suited to get into a routine of every night going on long-term trickle charge. That's not the best optimum utilization of the battery technology these days in electric vehicles. So I would suggest that we need at least a combination of some trickle charge as well as rapid charge would be the ideal or the optimum for us, and probably at city services as well as city development. So I think if we were to accelerate now without infrastructure upgrades, we'd have to do that with a degree of caution on the numbers that our systems could take on a trickle charge format as well.
Councillor Crossland.
So the next question is, we're talking big numbers, I think close to 3 million for the immediate transition. Are there any options for co-funding from other government bodies or federal government bodies that we could apply for?
Mr. Dunnicliffe.
Through the chair, there are some opportunities in that space. So the paper talks to the ARENA funding, which is the Australian Renewables option there, and it has been reviewed previously. So the other two collaborating councils have looked at that thus far, and there is an opportunity to put in a grant funding application for those for that body to assist with some of this infrastructure. They have quite regular funding rounds, so that would be an option to explore, as well as we would proactively look to approach someone like Green Industries South Australia to see if there's any opportunities for grant funding there as well. So they're the two that stand out at this point in time as opportunities to seek some external funding.
Councillor Crossland.
My last question. So if we press the go button, where do we get the $3 million from? Is that as putting rates up by another 3% or borrowing the money? Is that really our only two options?
Through the chair, if I can, please. I think in reality, that is it. If you're going to accelerate it, I would suggest that we really strongly need to consider the infrastructure upgrade, at least one of the $600,000, and maybe take on vehicles that can accommodate charging at one of our sites versus both of them. At $600,000, round figures, is 0.7% of one average rate rise, if you want to sort of put it in some sort of context to raise that, or you would go into borrowings because it is capital upgrade. So you certainly could consider borrowings for that. Round figures, it's going to be $100,000 per year for 10 years to sort of pay back that sort of money, interest and principal, round figures at the same time. So yes, we have the capability of doing it. If it's a priority for council, we certainly could look to expedite the infrastructure upgrades that would support both trickle charge and rapid charges. That would allow us to get the optimum utilisation of vehicles, and I think also to push back on resistance by some people to adopt an electric vehicle approach. I think that also sends a very clear message. And also we are delineating, I guess, between heavy vehicles and other pieces of kit and equipment in this discussion as well. And I think the paper articulates well that we just need to go a little bit slowly over the next 1 to 2 years till we see the technology improve in relation to those other forms of vehicles. Thank you.
Yes. Obviously, whatever option is chosen will have an impact on the framing of the budget. The only other, apart from rates, loans, the only other source of funding I could think of would be selling off a block of land that isn't particularly well used. But anyway, leave it to council. Councillor Valescu, then Councillor Mates.
Yeah, I'm just wondering what the net costs would be per vehicle. And moving forward, what would the net cost when we replace electric vehicles with other electric vehicles? Is there any information on that?
Through the chair, if I could maybe add two pieces of response there. On average, just to get some context, $30,000 additional to a conventional petrol diesel vehicle is around about the mark. It varies on the model of the vehicle and also the manufacturer producing it. So they vary somewhere $30,000 to $40,000, but you could take a ballpark figure of $30,000 to $35,000 additional. In response to the second part of the question, I'd suggest that who knows how rapid the market is going to adjust to more electric vehicles in the next 2 to 3 years. Is it going to take longer than that for us to see a downward trend in relation to the cost of electric vehicles to purchase? Or because everybody's moving somewhat at the same time, bring them on the UK now, one in every five vehicles ordered in the UK is now fully electric. In Australia, it's only one in 20. So let's say we move to one in 10 in the next 2 to 3 years. My guess is we're going to keep significant demand on supply. And if we keep demand on supply, invariably supply and demand economics will tell you that the price is going to stay high because there's such demand on accessing those vehicles over the foreseeable future in Australia.
The other question is, what are the other opportunities for charging? So we don't actually have to pay for it. Are there other locations? Have we looked at that? Any information on that?
There is a limited, through the chair, sorry, there are a limited number of options, but these are poor vehicles and also contract vehicles. They need to be accessible. I'd suggest they really need to be where the majority of our staff are, so we don't have any downtime because people can't access a vehicle to be deployed into the field. So I'd suggest really we have to be self-catering, both in trickle and rapid, at our dominant locations where we have the majority of staff and where the vehicles will largely be stored at the same time.
Councillor Mates. Oh, sorry, Councillor Valescu, did you have another one? I'll come back to you if you want. Councillor Mates, thanks.
As I understand, the current yearly kilometre average of a City of Marion fleet is roughly 15,000 kilometres. That equates to about 290 k's a week and potentially averages 5 hours of driving per week. Have you explored a reduction of fleet and the impacts this would have both towards emissions and cost?
Mr. Harrison.
Through the chair, we have done that and we're just finalising the fleet rationalisation at the moment, and I would expect we will look at reducing vehicles and fleet overall. So the previous manager of operations, Mr. Troop, who's now left, has started and done a lot of that work, and we're going through rationalisation at the moment and we will see a reduction.
But the if I can just add to that, the savings from fleet reduction needs to be kept as a separate financial process from proposed expenditure, doesn't it? Because we're going to be doing that anyway, so it's kind of a baseline saving. We still need to understand and vote on the cost as a separate standalone issue, although it is linked, I can see that.
And can also add through the chair, the larger weighting of rationalisation to give the full transparency of the story is really towards mid to heavy vehicles as well. We have a lot of heavy vehicles that sit around a long time idle, and we believe there are some rationalisation opportunities to quit the capital investment and either hire or share between our council arrangements through our alliance. In relation to the pool, gone through a number of fleet rationalisations in different organisations over the years, and despite lower kilometres, I think it's often the case that people often require the cars at the same time. So despite the fact they're doing 4 kilometres and 6 kilometres and 8 kilometres, it is often the concentration between the 8:30 and the 4:30 when vehicles are required, but they do sit idle a lot of the time in the car parks for the other 16 hours of the day or thereabouts as well. And I think that's always the dilemma, to sort of have the availability for efficiency and optimising people moving around, but also not having vehicles sitting in car parks during the day in particular that aren't getting up kilometres, because you really want your vehicles to be turning over and getting up kilometres to reach their optimum efficiency as well.
Councillor Mates, anything further? No. Councillor Valescu, did you have another? So, Masika.
Thank you, Your Worship. My question, following question is to the CEO. I was reading up in the Intergovernment Panel on Climate Change report, which has come recently, and also United Nations Secretary General. His speech, he was outlining that the countries needs to take up to 2040 to be able to transition from now to zero emission. So I'm looking up this option number one. We as a council, why do you want to move, you know, flipping the switch overnight to move from where we are today to zero? While the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, they say you have up to 2040 to be able to reduce the temperature not to reach 1.5% centigrade. So why are we rushing instead of being sensible and reasonable without putting pressure?
Councillor Masika, I appreciate the point of view, but there was really a comment in that question which could be saved for the debate. What staff have done is present the options, and it's really for us to decide rather than staff decide the options. But I think staff are doing their best to provide the information. So with all due respect, I think you could save that one for the debate. Councillor Valescu, waiting. Councillor Pryor, sure.
Thank you. Just have a quick question through the chair for the chief, and it's, we're going to execute the city services infrastructure upgrade anyway. It does make sense to me to modify the infrastructure once in a course of time rather than twice. So do you have an idea of the cost difference if we do both these things at the same time, like the infrastructure for electric and the water business?
That would be the plan, wouldn't it, Mr. Hanson?
So through the chair, I'm looking at our fearless CFO, and I understand that we have no budget for any infrastructure upgrades at all on either side at the moment. So if we push the button for the infrastructure upgrade at one of the sites or both the sites, $600,000 per site, that's going to be new money for the infrastructure. It's not considered within the 23-24 budget at the moment, is what I understand. And I'm just waiting for a fearless nod there. Yep. So yes, we are going to have to outlay some money, and sooner or later at City Services, sooner, we are going to have to consider an infrastructure upgrade to support the Marion Water business expansion, which I understand will double up and allow us to have the capacity to also look at more of a hybrid trickle and rapid charge for a number of vehicles, dare I say a dozen, 15 or so vehicles from the City Services depot area.
Can I please just clarify, as I understand Councillor Pryor's question, I think the councillor is saying you've got two major upgrades to the electricity capacity at the depot site, at least. Why wouldn't you do that once rather than have two separate upgrades? And in other words, if the fleet one comes first, you would cater for the water business. If the water business comes first, you'd cater for the fleet.
Through the chair, that is the intention. There is obviously the we're currently awaiting a detailed report from the consultants on the detail of how the SA Power Networks need to upgrade the transformer to allow more electricity to come from the grid, and that upgrade from SA Power Networks will be able to suffice both of those elements. I think that at the moment the report we're awaiting in greater detail will specify exactly how that will occur, but the intent is that it opens the ability for more electricity to flow into that site rather than having two distinctly different supply options available to us. And that would be the intent of how we would upgrade overall.
So that makes perfect sense to me. So the water business upgrade is not costed and budgeted yet?
Through the chair, I understand that we've got some very loose estimates that we touched on yesterday in the reference group meeting, and we're looking at still firming up those, what it would be. But I think the point is well made here. One piece of work will hopefully be able to accommodate two strategies, one pertaining to electric vehicle and one pertaining to increased pumping capacity for Marion Water.
If I can just clarify to make sure we've all got this right, we funded the Marion Water business, said go ahead with that. But this is an additional element which has to be built on, which we've discovered since then, to make it happen. So there's an upgrade either way.
The last question I have is about renewable infrastructure at the depot. Is there any more room on the roof? Or has anyone looked at solar through the car park to cover any of that sort of stuff as well?
Through the chair, the roof is at full capacity for the weight limit of the panels at the moment. There hasn't been any intensive work done in relation to ground panels at any of the available space. It is part of the larger strategy around the renewables and the generation of the utilities team, but there hasn't been any detail provided to that at the moment. The panels that are in place at the moment contribute to reducing the grid electricity usage of the day-to-day operations of the business at the moment.
Yeah, great. And just anecdotally, Westfield went through the same process that we're going through, looking at getting extra power coming into the site. And that's the reason they have a whole heap of solar car parks on their second deck, because it was actually cheaper for them in the long term to produce the energy themselves. It saved them from getting another big upgrade from SAPN. So there's definitely something worth looking at. I don't think we've quite got the area to do what we need to do, but it'd be worth looking at.
That's right. As I understand it, the solar panel car park idea was looked at somewhat, but it was on the assumption of satisfying the electricity needs of the depot building primarily and taking into account the solar panel contribution. But if there's substantially more draw on electricity, it changes the equation quite a bit. And $600,000 is a lot of carports and solar panels. But I don't know what the relative contribution of energy would be.
Yeah, that's correct. And if it prevents us from spending that hundreds of thousands of dollars on another SAPN, you know, let's say another box, then it's worth looking at.
Appreciate battery may be involved as well. I will allow the extra question, Councillor Crossland, but I'll just go to Councillor Valescu first.
Yeah, just further on that one, I'm still not clear. Is it like putting in a bigger pipe? So is that what we have? So we have the bigger pipe for the electricity to come in for the pumping, and then we need an even bigger pipe for the potential for charging stations up to 15, 16. So is it going to cost us, is it going to be cheaper to get it just one bigger pipe? Is that what we're getting? And then look at perhaps the specific charging infrastructure for the cars at a later date. Now can we have that, and can we actually have that identified?
So through the chair, my understanding, and I use that caveat that we're waiting for the detailed report in May, is that there's only ever going to be one upgrade, and the upgrade will accommodate both needs. And maybe it is a little bit akin to an NBN type data speed, that you pay for the speed and you've got to look at what capacity for what speed you need. We are taking into consideration an EV need as well as a pumping need, and trying to future-proof the site need. And we're buying a solution, I understand one solution, which is going to, for the EV side of things, be upwards of $600,000. But it will be dual purpose, which will actually somewhat better future-proof the whole of the site at the same time. But we're not putting in dual pipes. We're putting in a single pipe solution, using that analogy.
So what would you put in if it was just for the water? Same pipe and just not the charging station?
Do you want to? If I can, please have the first go. So just to ensure that we're not confusing water capacity in a pipe versus electricity into
the
site.
Electricity is just the metaphor.
Yeah. So this is just electricity. There will be an additional pump unit built on the city services site to support the 12-kilometre expansion and heading in a certain direction. But we're only talking about a single SAPN capacity upgrade to the site.
Into your microphone, please, Councillor Bliss.
So technically, we'll be ready to install the charging stations at any time after that. Okay, cool. Thank you.
As I understand it, the charging stations can go in any time, but their capacity will be limited without an upgrade. Is that a better description?
Through the chair, at City Services, an example, there is the charges, as we're talking at the moment, are still high speed that draw more electricity available. The trickle charge is the interim option that you would effectively plug into any normal power point and would have a limit to the amount of charge that it can bring out. There is capacity for a very small volume of high-speed charges at City Services, none here due to the electricity available, but the trickle charge would be an interim, and then once the upgrade had happened, we would have capacity for multiple and as many as we would require high-speed charges to draw from that transformer upgrade.
Just a question arising from that is, what is the wasted cost, so to speak, by putting in trickle charges and then later replacing them with high-speed charges?
Through the chair, there'd be no wastage. There is a very small outlay that we would have for the charges that effectively would go into any normal power point. They average around 600 at the moment, and they would last the lifetime of any, say, salary package vehicles that we would have, as they would be ready for renewal. We would simply take them off-site, hand them to the employee at home, and they would utilise in that manner.
Thank you. Now back to Councillor Crossland.
Thank you. There's a lot of information there. So just to clarify, if we wanted to move ahead with, say, 15 vehicles, but we also wanted to ensure, as Mr. Harrison has said, that we're not getting those vehicles and finding we can't use them. So a situation where we get the 15 vehicles, but we've got enough rapid chargers at City Services and the rest on trickle chargers to make it viable, because there's no point having a fleet that we can't use. What is the minimum cost that we would need to just get that up and running while we explore all the other add-ons and future fleet?
Through the chair, I think there's two components. If you use the 15 cars at an average of the $30,000 extra, you're going to be around about that $500,000 to $600,000 in changeover from conventional vehicles currently to EV vehicles, 15 of them. And then it would be the $600,000. So I think in round figures, you're looking at somewhere around about the $1.1 million. If you were to have full capacity without any compromise at the City Services depot, and yes, it would also help us go a long way to helping us to prepare ourselves for the future water business expansion capacity requirement as well. So I think round figures, it's around about the $1.1 million doing it on the back of an envelope approach at the moment for up to 15 vehicles if we moved, say, in the next 12 months, if we can source the vehicles too, obviously.
Can I just...
It's a complex matter, so I'll be liberal with allowing questions.
So I'm just mindful that there are opportunities for grant funding, and I know that if we say, right, we're going to put the whole lot in, the chance of getting grant funding is gone. But the fact that we need the infrastructure fairly quickly at City Services to solve two problems with one amount of money sort of changes it. But if we did the 15 cars, relied on the infrastructure we've got, at what stage does it become essential that we spend the additional 600? Because what I'm thinking is, I still like the option of getting third-party funding rather than just jump in.
Through the chair, if I can just respond. That level of detail, can I just respectfully say, I think we would need to wait for the more detailed report, the SAPN implication report. I think trying to hazard somewhat a guess on that proposition right now comes with a fair bit of risk, because I don't really know whether it's 3 vehicles, trickle charge, 6 vehicles, 8 vehicles, 10 vehicles. We don't know when we're going to get to a capacity that we start to trip and cause electrical supply problems at the whole of the site. I think that's the dilemma I see, providing you a more fuller definitive answer at this point in time.
It's sort of not answered. It's the longer we delay, you know, we could look at doing the upgrade. It might take a year to get the infrastructure built. We know it's about 6 to 12 months for a vehicle. So we're sort of, in my view, on a bit of a timeline. And I'm looking for a solution where we can make some form of investment without leading to operational problems. And that was the number I was after, of what number of electric vehicles do we think we could charge without the additional infrastructure? As in a range. If you say 15 is too many, you might say, I'm only comfortable with 5.
Do we know?
I don't know. I'm not sure Mr. Dunnicliffe could help. I'd suggest it's got to be a small number rather than going for the 15 or the 20. But could I also say, through the chair, for elected members to consider, I just think one can't be considered without the other. The infrastructure is a thing that we must do to ensure electric vehicles can be utilised to their optimum. I think that is accepted good evidence. So if we are considering trying to rapidly increase the uplift and utilisation of electric vehicles, I would encourage council to have that consideration in relation to the infrastructure implications as well.
So I'll allow more questions, because this is it is really a complex issue, and we're talking about millions of dollars. But what I'm picking up is that there are two areas where we don't have full information. One is in relation to the possibility, or the possible benefit of what we call a solar car park, adding a large number of extra solar panels. And I mean, an expert might be able to tell me in 5 minutes that it won't go anywhere near close enough, and so we should just take it off the table. But I haven't heard that tonight. And the other one is about grant funding, that if there is a possibility, it's obviously worth pursuing. And we don't have that information clearly available tonight, it seems. So I'm just wondering if there's any sense from management that this should come back on another occasion, or is there a management view on that? I'm not pushing for it, but what is your view, Mr. Harrison?
Through the chair, the view that I would give is, if there is members have the appetite to want to more aggressively change over and transition from conventional powered vehicles to electric vehicles, that the certainty that we do have, with some degree of caution, is a $600,000 infrastructure upgrade for city services, putting city development building, this building, to one side. I would once again reiterate, I think to get optimum utilisation of the vehicles and to allow further transition across the 36 potential passenger vehicles over the next couple of years, we just have to address the infrastructure upgrade issue. And certainly, if there is grant options, we should absolutely vigorously pursue those. But we know with those, there's no certainty. So once again, I guess I would ask council to consider their desire, willingness and appetite to actually push ahead with maximising the 36 vehicles as best we can, as quick as we can, but there is going to be an infrastructure cost to do that as well.
And may I add to that, that the city services seems to be in a slightly different case to the administration building on Sturt Road, because we have to do an upgrade there at some point anyway. So that is quite a different consideration. And the only concern that arises out of that comment about grants is whether agreeing to fully fund and put in our budget a certain amount somehow precludes us from grant funding. I'd certainly like to know the answer to that. So anyway, I've got a few other questions. Councillor Taylor.
Thank you, Mayor. In terms of where the high used pull cars, the location, is that, are we talking the city services or is it here?
Through the chair, it's actually quite a level mix of both. We have quite a lot of the community safety and health staff situated at this building that use the cars predominantly all day, and then there also are the open space staff that use. So it is quite a similar split across the board. So it wouldn't be necessarily more used over at City Services.
Through the chair, if I could please jump in though, but the vast majority of our fleet, passenger, mid and heavy vehicles, are at City Services, and that's where they're always going to be. So if you look at the totality of the numbers of the fleet, the vast, vast majority are always going to remain and be deployed out of the City Services depot building.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Pryor.
It looks like this is going to get deferred, but let's just ask a question anyway. Have we looked at bi-directional charging? Because if you park 20 EVs in a car park, that is a massive battery that you can use, especially if you have fleet vehicles that go out at 7 and come back at 3, there's still time to charge them up at the end of the day and discharge at the end of the day, those sorts of things. So bi-directional charging is not a thing really in Australia yet, I don't think, but overseas it certainly is. And so we should definitely make allowances for that.
Through the chair, I have done some research on that. It's that capability, if people are sort of wondering a little bit about that comment. The suggestion is that vehicle batteries in the future are going to have more capacity than a house battery you might have in your shed that's drawing power from your solar panels during the day and topping up your battery. So I've heard things such as 56 kilowatts. I'm not sure what that really means, but I've heard car batteries in the future will be able to store up to 56 kilowatts. And for example, you could start to operate your washing machine, your fridge and your freezer at nighttime after hours as it's actually sitting in your shed. That's the concept. I do understand it's not available, the technology in Australia at the moment. It's just in its infancy in some European countries. And I don't have any understanding as to when that sort of battery capability might be able to be deployed in Australia.
Did I have another question on my left? No.
Just a comment before you go on, Councillor Buskew. The technology's here, just the paperwork's not.
Okay. Thank you, Councillor Valescu.
Yeah, a couple of questions. First of all, what's going to be the cost to do the upgrade just for the pump? And why aren't we allocating that towards the pump? Like if we're going to do the two, why don't you split it into two different cost centres?
Through the chair, if I read the question right, it is one. There will be one piece of new money that will be required that will provide us two solutions. We understand at the moment the EV estimate is $600,000, and waiting for that to be confirmed. We haven't yet understood. We're going through that process at the moment to understand if we were to just do the increase in electrical capacity for the pump. We haven't got a costing for that at the moment. I even think, dare I say it, we sort of maybe estimated $230,000 to $300,000. But I'd also be curious as to know whether or not you'd even do that, because we know in the future we are going to need more than just a water pump capacity increase for the City Services site. So I think it's more reliable to suggest that it's going to be in the vicinity of $600,000 would be required for an SAPN transformer upgrade for the City Services site, which could have multiple solutions for us.
Any final questions?
Well, my final question is, don't you think we need more information before making this decision? That's my question.
Well, I think I've already put that question to Mr. Harrison, and he's expressed a view. What I have picked up is that there may be interest outside the three options that are drafted. If anyone wants to, can I just say this, if anyone would like to consider an alternative to any of those three options, then I think you should indicate that we suspend standing orders rather than trying to develop words on the run and be confined to that formal debate. However, if there is nobody who needs to go outside the recommended wording, then we can just carry on. Councillor Crossland?
Look, the debate's been very dynamic and helpful, but I'll still put the alternative motion up because I think it gives us the opportunity to drill down on some of the questions which I don't think have been answered fully, if I may.
Thank you. Has that been circulated previously? then...
No, it was very late today that it was finalised with some additional information.
Right. If I'm not hearing any motion for suspension, then... Or just, I think, thank you. Is that seconded? Councillor Taylor, thank you. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. No, sorry, those against? Carried by majority, thank you. All I want to do is sort out which of where people are at with the four motions, or if you want to include a fifth one, adjournment, which might involve a request for particular additional information. I suppose Councillor Crossland's motion could be used as a vehicle for adjournment, but we could perhaps test the wording on that if people want to go down that track. So could I just have a quick show of hands, since we're not voting, we're not making a proper decision. I just, as chair, I just want to know which motion we should test on the floor. So if you could just choose one of the four, the on page 38, options 1, 2, and 3, which is described there, transition over the next 12 months, transition to EV as vehicles need replacement, transition to hybrid and EV later, or transition to 15 immediately, get some more information, etc. So testing those...
Clarification.
Yes.
Is there a deferment motion as well?
Those that want the deferment motion, I would suggest... let's do it as a separate option. So you've got five options now. Remember, it's not a vote, so you know, you go for anyone you want, but I'll put that on the table then. Mr. Harrison wants to speak to the Crossland motion.
Through the chair, if I can, please, without... I can see it. That is the additional one.
Can you all see the alternative motion?
So through if I can, through the chair, please, just for absolute clarity from my perspective, this is certainly doable, if I can say in practical terms, because of the way the word in number two, one is an easy given. Number two carefully uses up to in two positions, which gives some discretion based on the complexity of ordering sourcing vehicles and also potential upgrades to facilitate the utilisation of vehicles in an incremental manner. So it does provide some flexibility. I would just like to really stress, though, that the proposed $535,000 is new money. So to make this work, there is a cost of expediting, moving from conventional vehicles, which are not have not reached their expiry date yet, to accelerate them into electric. And that's that differentiation of between $30,000 to $40,000 per vehicle that we would have to compensate between disposing a conventional vehicle and purchasing a new electric vehicle up to 15 times over in the next 12 or so months.
Yeah, I think, yeah, that's understood. Any in terms of the table on page 38, it's got current long-term financial plan. So that's your baseline. And the any additional changes beyond that represent an additional amount. In terms of the table, it's slightly confusing because it gives a total amount, and therefore the additional amount is the number minus 3.5 million. So option one is approximately an extra 3 million. Option two is about extra 2.5 million. Option three is about extra 400,000. And the alternatives, so-called alternative motion, is up to an extra 500,000 or so. So just so people are clear on that. So now, Councillor Crossland, go.
It's one clarification as
yes,
well,
yes.
Because it's not got a number on there and it's not in the table. What would the savings be from having electric vehicles rather than petrol and diesel? Because that's the capital cost, but the running cost, the savings,
would come to council, but they're not documented.
It's a relevant question. Mr. Dunnicliffe, are the savings set out in options 1, 2, and 3? Are they only capital costs?
Through the chair, that the attachment on page 58 goes into greater detail around the operational costs of the vehicles at the current state. Those numbers transfer back to that abridged table on 38. If we look at the report itself, we have already a mix of hybrid vehicles, so the operational cost doesn't diminish as much for the current hybrid footprint. However, the current fuel combustion or ICE vehicles would have a greater OPEX saving overall. If we look at that in actual dollar figures, we have an offset of electricity usage, which has been modelled, and we can see that roughly 40% savings in the operational element would be what we would be factoring in. The vehicles, the total vehicle footprint ranges in cost in operational expenditure each year between 5,000 and 15, but on average it sits somewhere in between 7 or 8. So you'd have 40% of that each year factored in, which is around 3 to 4K per vehicle, or 120 to 150,000.
So I think now, just a moment. Page 58. I'm looking at the table of micro print, and Mr. Dunnicliffe, what I'm trying to discern is where the balancing benefits are compared to the capital cost. Is it where it says operating expenditures, and would I be looking at are they cumulative totals as you go through each year or not? I see there's a total, but are they operating expenditures? I see they're operating expenditures per year, but then the total compares the current long-term plan. Is that right?
Through the chair, that is. The operational expenditure also factors in for the next 3 financial years, the FBT savings on electric vehicles for salary packaged as well.
So if you sit there for a while, you can actually work out what you have to deduct from each option to have the net cost. It's unfortunate that that wasn't clearly stated in the report, I would say. But can you, you'd be more familiar with the figures, Mr. Dunnicliffe. If you factor in, and I mean, it sort of depends whether you take the 10-year figure or not, I suppose, but can you give us an offset figure of savings, whether it's FBT, energy, fuel, et cetera, for options 1, 2, 3, and let's call this option 4 on the screen. Are you able to do that?
Through the chair, if I can just clarify, that's the operating expenditure element? Or
what we're trying to do is work out the real cost or the net cost. On page 38, and indeed in the option 4, as I've now called it, we clearly have the capital expenditure. But to make, I mean, if we saved $1 million a year from option 1, we would know that it would obviously be worth doing, but obviously that's not the figure. So, but the savings in expenditure is something that we logically should consider as an offset to the capital expenditure. If we're saving huge amounts of fuel and FBT each year, then that helps us make a decision about capital expenditure. So are you able to give an offset figure, in other words, the operating benefit, that seems the most obvious one, for each of those 4 options? Calling in the chief financial officer here. I hope I'm not being pedantic. I mean, do members agree? It's a good question.
Yeah.
All right.
700,638. Yep. Yep. For the 4 feet. Yeah. 700. We take your 2,300 less your 1935 and add on your 336. Yep.
Can you speak to the microphone? Thanks, Mr. Barnwell.
Through the chair. If you look at option one, there will be a saving of 700,000 over the 10 years, which is 70,000 a year. That includes a benefit of FBT savings of 336,000. Option two then has a saving of 638,000 over the 10 years, including an FBT saving of 188 because it's a slower transition to EVs. And option three, I think, as Mr. Dunnifclit said, option three, the hybrid version, you don't really have a huge amount of savings over existing costs.
And Mr. Barnwell, would be some, I think Mr. Dunnicliffe was talking about an operational benefit in relation to, for example, 15 electric vehicles in what I'm calling option four. Do we have a simple figure for that? About 350,000? Right. And that, of course, depends on the number of vehicles purchased. Okay, that was most useful. Thank you. So now we have, well, we still have five options on the table. I hope people have been able to work out the maths, but I think I'll go through it. So I'm now, this is the mayor's maths, but it's pretty good. Option one, additional cost, and there are certain assumptions in saying operating benefit savings over 10 years, but it's not an unfair comparison. So option one, transition over the next 12 months, 6.5 minus 3.5 is 3 million, less 700,000 is about 2.33 million, a cost offset by operating expenditure savings and FBT. That's over 10 years.
That's not 1 year, it's 10 years.
That's savings over 10 years because we'll be rolling over the cars every 3 or 4 years, but we'll still have the operating benefit of electric vehicles for that whole time. Option two, 6.2 becomes a 3.5 is about 2 million after you take off those two figures. The existing budgeted capital cost and the additional operating benefit.
Included, that operating benefit is already included in that total, so you're just taking it out a second time.
I beg your pardon?
On page 58.
Didn't realise that was the case. Mr. Dunnicliffe?
You've got it in brackets.
So I shouldn't be deducting it twice. So those original figures I was giving were correct. Sorry, that's what I was asking, picking up on Councillor Crossland's point about operating benefit being offset. The offset figures are already in there. Okay, my maths is good. My assumptions aren't that good. Councillor Crossland?
The only option it wasn't included in is option four.
We now have a figure for option four, which if you assume those vehicles operate for 10 years and get a saving of 350, reduces it down to around $200,000 if there were 15 vehicles and we don't have to add a electricity upgrade, which we will be doing anyway at City Services. Councillor Masika. Okay. So I go back to the figures I was dealing with before, that option one, if you simply, because what I was trying to work out for councillors, for all of us, is the additional capital expenditure less the operating benefit over 10 years. So when I look at option one, transition to EV over the next 12 months, it's about 6.5 minus 3.5 is an extra 3 million. When I look at option two, it's about 6.3 minus 3.5, so it's about 2.3. Now I'm being corrected again.
So 6.4, 6.6. You're already taking the.
All right, sorry, Mr. Harrison. Can you please give us the figures?
I apologise, Your Worship.
through the chair, certainly my understanding, page 58, which has got a lot of data, certainly year by option by option already takes into consideration what money we would save on using electricity versus petrol or diesel. It also takes into consideration FBT reductions. So
Mr. Harrison, I'm trying to make, let's make sense of the table figures on page 38.
So to make sense of that table, you take those figures as they are, if you support those options. The only one we haven't done and extrapolated is the new option 4, which is on the screen, which is...
No, may I please jump in, because I was being corrected about the options 1, 2 and 3 subtracting the figure that's already in the long-term financial plan. If you can do that better than I can, please proceed so that we know the additional expenditure in each case. It's quite clear in option 4 that it's the figure on the screen, up to 535,000. I was simply going A minus B in respect to the first three options. And I've... Go ahead, Mr. Harrison.
That's the CFO's figures.
They're the same as the ones I was dealing with, but you can read it out to the last $10,000. You go ahead, Mr. Harrison.
So through the chair, option 1 becomes a positive 2,957,000. Option 2, staging it, becomes a positive 2,767,000 additional cost. So it's, if you like, $220,000 difference, 210. And option 3 is a plus $386,000 over the 10-year period.
And option 4 is about 200,000. Mr. Barnwell, tell me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
He says I'm good, which is a separate question, but I'll accept that as accurate. Now, that gives you some perspective, I hope. Councillors, we still have suspended standing orders, quite evidently. Councillor Pryor, before we proceed, you have something else?
There's one last piece of clarifying information, and that is of the council fleet, what percentage does 15 cars represent? So in the first two options, you're doing the whole fleet, whereas in the option...
Well, how many passenger vehicles would that be more relevant? You're doing 15
cars, yeah.
36. So it's almost half, but that's the mayor dealing in round figures again. Yes, Councillor Blescu.
Look, sorry to bug you asking questions all the time. If it was all in the report, I wouldn't need to. How come we can replace half the fleet for $200,000 and the whole fleet for $2 million and almost $3 million?
Because of the $1.2 million electricity upgrade that's factored into options 1 and 2.
So there won't be an upgrade, we won't be paying for an upgrade. There won't be charging stations for these for the fleet.
The options options 3 and 4 do not have an immediate commitment to upgrade of electricity in respect of one of our sites in the next couple of years. We'll be looking at upgrading it anyway. So that figure of $600,000 estimate would come in a couple of years later. That doesn't mean that we couldn't be charging some vehicles in the meantime. But I take
the 10-year plan, there's still going to be an extra cost. We're just not putting it in now.
That's
so
right.
Why aren't we including that in the budget? Like, I guess we've got something right at the end and it looks quite attractive, but we don't have all the detail.
It's because, I mean, the other way to do it is to leave $600,000 of cost out of the first two figures, which reduces that to 2.4 million and 2.2 million. Why? Because we're going to be doing that upgrade anyway, whether we do options 1, 2, 3, or 4. That is, assuming when we come back with another water business report and it says, one thing we didn't mention before, we're going to need $600,000 extra. Presumably we'll agree to it as an integral component of that business we already agreed to. So it would actually make sense if that $600,000 didn't appear in any option or appeared as a separate item, because it happens regardless. Does that make sense?
That does.
Draws together options one and two versus three and four by $600,000. Councillor Telfer.
If we're comparing options one, two and three, which bring in 36 vehicles, and option four that only discusses 15 vehicles, then you need to add in the other 21 vehicles in the status quo as well. So it's not just 200,000, it's 200,000. Add the status quo for the other 21 vehicles.
But for the other 21 vehicles, Councillor Telfer, with respect, the capital cost of replacement and the operating costs are in the current long-term financial plan figure, which is at the top of the table. A manager will surely tell me if I'm wrong about that. I'm being advised that I'm correct about that, and I'm good as well. Councillor Taylor.
Maybe I've missed it. In terms of EV vehicles, is the plan to actually hang on to the EV vehicles longer than our current vehicles at the moment?
Question, what's our current policy and what would it be for EVs in terms of fleet replacement?
Through the chair, the modelling's done on the current asset renewal plan. So at the moment, it's 3 years or 50,000 kilometres, and that has been the model utilised for this.
Councillor Taylor?
In terms of technology, would we see a benefit with EV vehicles that we can hold the vehicles longer in our fleet?
Through the chair, the current disposal proceeds of electric vehicles are still very immature from a market evidence perspective. The indications from the research undertaken is that the technology will continue to improve. I'll be honest, it's a bit of an unknown in relation to the tipping point of when the combustion vehicles become less attractive from a changeover perspective and electric vehicles take over. At this point in time, there's not enough renewals occurring. So it's a long-winded way of saying we don't have that factored in at the moment. We would expect they would hold value in the first round of renewals, given that it will still be immature in the marketplace, and I'd expect that the modelling will still be strong for what we've received in the disposal proceeds.
Think about the best we can do. So again, we still have standing orders suspended. So I'm just after some guidance about which motion should be formally entertained on a yes-no basis. So you've got options 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 is simply to adjourn, and we'll develop what information we need if that is the case. So option 1, transition to EV over 12 months. Hands up, anyone who's favour. Option 2, stage transition as EV to EV as vehicles are ready for replacement. All right, thank you. And option 3, transition to hybrid and EV at a later stage. Those in favour, option 4, it's up on the screen. Got a few there. And adjournment. That's got the numbers at the moment. So basically, I'll invite someone to move an adjournment. If that fails, then we will seek a resolution on one of the other options. So, Councillor Masika, you want to move a motion to adjourn?
Yeah, thanks, Your Worship. I'd like to move the motion to adjourn motion for the time being, for reasons that we need more information so that we can make a decision which way to go forward. And the second, the other things which we need into the information for is if there are grants available out there, we need to know the condition of those grants and how much can we get out of those grants, and what are the conditions which we need to know so that we can be able to attract to apply for those grants. And then to know what other technologies available, recent one in the market, and to see if we take this one, where are they going to lead us in terms of the next 3 years or 10 years?
And Councillor Masika, I've just consulted with the Chief Executive to as to a likely time frame to get substantially more information, and the suggestion is June. So would you like to adjourn that to June this year?
I think, Your Worship, I'd like to do that, because I know that the climate change is a serious issue. It needs some actions, but we still have all the time we need by 2040 or 2030, the earliest, to do the changes.
Well, Councillor Singh seconded. Then I'll put the adjournment motion. All those in favour? All those against? The motion's carried. So we'll come back in June. I invite councillors to contact Mr. Harrison, probably better to go through him initially, with any suggestions about further information that's required, so that we can have a comprehensive and comprehensible report when it comes back in June. So I know we spent a fair bit of time on it, but it's very worthwhile, something that we have to get right. And that takes us on to page 59, National Reconciliation Week funding. Just check if there are any questions. If not, then after someone to move a motion, Councillor Lama.
Just move the motion, that's it.
Motion Thank as you. Printed. As we say. So did you want to speak to the motion?
No, it's all right. I'm happy to move the motion. That's it. No comment.
Is that seconded, Councillor Crossland? Any further? Any speaking against? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Thank you. So that additional funding should help them meet their KPIs. Excellent. We're on to page 68. And it was an excellent trip to the US, by the way. Page 68, Lonsdale Highway. It's a motion from Councillor Luscombe.
Thank you, Mayor Hannah. So the purpose of this motion, there are some residents who live along Lonsdale Highway who have reported some issues that have increased over time with regards to traffic. And that, yeah, the traffic issues have apparently gotten worse over time, which has impacted on the amount of traffic noise that they're able to hear from their homes and gardens. Further to that, they've also reported that the amount of traffic pollution has increased. And they're also concerned about possible safety issues that may result as a function of the traffic increasing along Lonsdale Highway. So these residents have, as I understand, issued petitions and letters to the Department for Transport and Infrastructure, because as it's a major highway, it's not the City of Marion's jurisdiction to do anything about it. And they've also contacted myself to advocate on their behalf. So I understand that the responses received thus far indicate that the Department for Transport and Infrastructure aren't able to act on their specific request around a wall being built. I'm not sure if that would be even the correct solution, but I guess we're at a bit of a stuck between a bit of a rock and a hard place, and that it's the residents are unsure what else they can do. And so the proposal relates to the City of Marion advocating on behalf of the residents, just, I guess, requesting what Minister Koutsantonis, who is the Minister for Transport and Infrastructure, could potentially do to help investigate and potentially address these issues that they've reported along Lonsdale Highway. So that's the purpose of the motion. It's just about writing a letter from council.
Is there a question, or was that seconded? Question, Councillor Blackstone.
I don't know if staff can answer them or whether the mover wishes to. They talk about issues of flooding on here. So is that something we can look into anyway, sort of soil erosion and flooding? And the other question is, what is the height of the wall that they would be looking at, taking into account SEBTID principles as far as visibility?
Anything from staff? Maybe the mover can address that in her closing remarks. I'll give her another opportunity to speak. Is the motion seconded? Last chance. Councillor Lama, thank you. Did you wish to speak to it? Anyone speaking against or question? Councillor Masika, then I'll go to Councillor Crossland.
Well, I do have a problem with the council writing the letter, but probably I was asking Councillor Liscombe to where the letter is written to be specific, because if it touches noises, safety, and also so many other issues, pollution and everything. So it's all over the place. So I wanted to be specific. Are we talking about the noise, which is understandable because of high vehicles passing the road? But when it comes up for safety, so it starts to bring up the question how the road was built, why they didn't consider that to start beginning if it's going to be cause some safety issues.
Again, in closing the debate, I'll allow Councillor Luscombe to address that. I should add some extra information. At least some of the same residents have written to me, and I've explained it's a state government issue, not a local government issue. Clearly, they've written to the minister, and you can see from that letter, the unsigned letter on page 69. But that's the reason for them for the motion. Well, I don't want to put thoughts into. That's the reason for them approaching Councillor Luscombe, I suspect. But I just wanted to add that background. Councillor Crossland, go ahead.
Thank you. There's a few reasons that I wouldn't support this resolution. The first one is only deals with a very small section of the road. There are actually a lot of residents live along the Lonsdale Road, including in Trott Park and Shido Park and Hallett Cove Heights, yet they seem to be forgotten. They are on the same road, so they must have the same noise, same number of cars going past. That section of road is really straight. I'm not sure personally of any safety issues. I'm not aware of even a single collision in that area. And we've just invested $200,000 putting trees and shrubs in to beautify the road, because it wasn't the most attractive of roads. And the last thing I'd support is a big wall. And the wall that they're talking about is similar to the ones you see along the expressway. They have to be very high and they have to be insulated. So pretty much a monstrosity. So it doesn't do all the great work we've done. And they're the main reasons I wouldn't support it.
Any other speakers in favour? Councillor, or a question, Councillor Taylor? Yes.
Did the residents actually get a response back from the letter that they wrote in? And when was the letter actually addressed?
All right. I think I'll leave that again for Councillor Luscombe to address as she replies. I don't know if there was that a question, Councillor Valescu? Speaking in favour? I've had a speaker against. The next in sequence, according to our procedures, would be a speaker in favour if there is one. A question, Councillor Valescu.
Motion fails. Does that mean that they will not be able to write a letter to the minister regarding this issue? And if it was withdrawn, then could it be brought forward or a letter be written at a later date?
Well, it means that a letter wouldn't be written about the specific matter that's contained in the motion.
In future?
Well, if it was specifically about that, and the motion's not successful, then the normal rules about rescission would apply. And you would be familiar with those, Councillor Valescu. So I think I'll leave it now to, if there are no further speakers, Councillor Luscombe, if you could kindly respond to those various questions. Thank you, as you wish.
Thank you, Mayor Hannah. So Councillor Velisco talked about the height of the wall, and Councillor Crossan mentioned that you know, the wall wouldn't be practical. And I note that the motion doesn't even mention a wall. What it talks about is writing a letter to ask the state government to respond to these issues in the way that they see fit. So there's nothing in there at all about a wall. That's a solution the residents have come up with. I've got no idea if that's a good idea or not. May not be. That's not what the letter's about. It's asking them to look into it. Because at this stage, what has happened in answer to your question, Councillor Taylor, is the response they've gotten is that it's not their job, that they would look at a wall if it was a new road or if it's a road that is being adjusted or, you know, in some way, then it would be their job to potentially look into noise solutions. But because it's not a new road, they're not looking into it. And that's with regard to noise. As far as I know, they haven't had a response with regard to pollution or safety issues. I don't know that that's been addressed, to my knowledge, by the state government at this stage. If they did have to build a wall, well, currently, actually, what I will say is that the provisions that the state government have given say that privately residents would need to come up with noise solutions themselves privately and pay for it. But then they also suggest if the road is up here and your house is down here, you'd actually need to build a road, a wall high enough to block the so that you can't actually see the traffic, which would be about a two-storey wall if the residents were to build that privately. But if it was built by the government, it could be higher. Anyway, I don't even know if the wall's a good idea, but I think I'm happy to amend it to adjust the length of the highway if that would prompt you to vote for it, Councillor Crossland, to say that for residents along Lonsdale Highway rather than just that specific section. But I don't know that that would adjust your vote anyway, to be honest. I'll leave it at that. It's the best I can do to answer the questions.
Thank you. Those in favour, please raise your hand. Those against, raise your hand. Now I have seen everyone vote. So the motion is defeated. So we can move on to page 71, please. Soft plastics, Councillor Luscombe.
Thank you, Mayor Hannah. So this motion is about soft plastics, and members will be aware that the Red Cycle soft plastics regime was paused for an unknown length of time. It's unclear when that's going to resume. And it's noted that other councils across South Australia and Victoria are involved in trials of soft plastics recycling currently. Many residents and businesses are expressing concerns that they do have few options now to actually recycle their soft plastics. And, yeah, they're making efforts, I think, to try and reduce their consumption of soft plastic material. Recycling is at the very top of the pyramid. Obviously, we want people to reduce their consumption, to reuse and recycle as a last resort, but we still do end up with some soft plastics, unfortunately. At the moment, I think they're mostly ending up in landfill, which is not great. So I came across an article, which I know it was not in the agenda, but I'm aware that councillors may have been forwarded that by Councillor Crossland through his involvement with SWARA. And hopefully everyone had the opportunity to read that article. And that article indicated that the soft plastic recycling trials across South Australia and Victoria have been successful to date, and there's been minimal contamination. That soft plastics collected in those trials are currently being recycled by APR plastics into oil, which is then turned into resin pellets, and that can then be converted into food grade packaging film, which is actually then recycled once again. It's got that cycle that can go round and around. So all this motion is asking for is some more information from administration, from our staff, around what options do we have available to us with regard to exploring soft plastics recycling in the city of Marion to support those residents and businesses for whom this is a significant issue. Thank you.
Is that seconded? Councillor Telfer?
I think it is essentially important that while the community has learnt to recycle soft plastics, not to encourage them to start throwing them back commingled in the general waste. So for that reason, I think this is a very valuable report to come back to us.
Anyone speaking against or questions? Then Councillor Hoffman.
In relation to soft plastics, I think that the momentum is there, and I agree with Councillor Telfer and Councillor Luscombe in maintaining that momentum in this space. My question is really around the logistics of the report. So I just wonder, you know, how many man hours does it take to write this report? You know, how long will it be? What does it take to write this report from a utilisation of our resources here at the City of Marion?
Yeah, to an extent, it's business as usual, Mr. Harrison. Any ideas?
Yeah, certainly through the chair, we would just prioritise. If we've got up to 12 months, we will find the resources to do something that's of value.
Very well. Any other questions against Councillor Crossland?
Just a question. Would that include contacting the CEO of SWARA? Because he could already probably answer this question already.
One would expect so, but not necessarily for us to. I mean, the motion leaves it very open, but Councillor Cross, you would have noticed in the staff information on page 72, it refers to the fact that SWARA has already been, or some information has already been obtained from SWARA, so one would expect it to be in the forthcoming report. If there are no other questions, or there's not really any speaking opposition, so I wouldn't normally go to a right of reply for that. So all those in favour, put up your hand. All those that is carried unanimously. Thank you. So we look forward to that. And now we come back to those adjourned confidential items. So with respect and apologies to the members of the public. We will, because we're dealing with tender documents and so on, we will have to go into a confidential setting and exclude members of the public and also any staff that aren't relevant to the reports. So we'll just wait for that to occur. Thank you.